You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Well, hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Melanie Bonk. We talk about her relationship. And specifically, she shares with us a story of a time when she was on a romantic vacation with her partner and something happened and she completely unraveled. So first of all, can I just say that it's super brave and generous that she's willing to share that story of this unraveling on vacation? Because while many of us might have moments like that in our lives and in our relationships, honestly, not everybody is brave enough to volunteer to share that. So that's very cool. More important or more helpful or more relevant to you as the audience is that Melanie then goes on to share with us what she did next and how she moved through that and made changes and transformation in her life and her relationship. I think you're going to love this. So let's get started, shall we? Melanie Bonk, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm so happy you're here. Are you ready for a chat today?
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Yay. All right. So first question I ask everybody, what part of the world do you call home?
I am in Southern Oregon. So we are the first town right above California. So you think of Oregon and it's like rainy, but we are actually a very arid, dry climate.
Fantastic. Are you on the coast or are you inland?
We're inland.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool. Actually, I will be spending more time in Oregon coming up. I'm actually headed out there in July. So I'm very excited to get to know it more. So in a second, we're going to talk about the topic of the day, which is not my love affair with Oregon, where you call home. But I ask one more warm-up question, which is laughter is what we call the best medicine. And so what is something that you can count on to make you smile and laugh?
You know, I'm going to say my partner, he has this way of just being silly and fun. And, you know, it's that special side of him that he shows just me usually. So those little moments where he's just super goofy, just crack me up. And together when we play as a couple, those just can come up into my head and just change my whole day.
Fantastic. All right. Yeah. Very good. Okay. So the topic of the day, you shared on your intake form that once upon a time you were on vacation with your partner. It makes you laugh and brings you joy. And your partner, you were on vacation, your partner left to grab a drink and you say that you unraveled in his absence, spiraling into a storm of abandonment and blame. My first question is, how long ago was it? Do you remember when this happened?
This was about 6 years ago. So about 20 years into our relationship.
Okay. Very interesting. Yeah. All right. Very good. Yeah. Next question, a little bit more background about you and what things are like in your house, just to build some rapport so that we're all on the same page. Do you share as much or as little as you want to about your relationship and the construction of your family? Are you married? Which I only ask because you're using the word partner. Do you have kids, pets, any of that fun stuff that you want to or don't want to share?
Yeah. So our family unit right now looks like four teenage boys in a house. So I am in a household of six humans, two dogs, and two cats.
All right.
And they're all male, even the animals. I don't know how this happened, but I am obviously the alpha female in this group. So my house growing up was a house full of divorce. And so I was in between. I was definitely getting those roots of abandonment in early as a child. And so when I did come to with my partner 26 years ago, if you can do the math, I really started diving into what it took to create a relationship that would thrive throughout time. And I wasn't willing to sacrifice love or passion. And I had seen my parents go through all of these turmoils. I had been stuck in the middle of it. And I watched every one of them sacrifice something along the way. They couldn't figure out how to have all of it together. So that's really where my passion for this relationship started, because I knew I didn't want to do that, especially if we had children. So it was a very, very long way to get to where I am now. And a lot of yelling, a lot of tears, a lot of slammed doors, as we got to the place where we're at now.
I'm interested to learn more about that, but that it is a piece that makes sense. Okay, so before we dig, so thank you for sharing about your family. I have one really, really old friend who has a similar construct as you. She's outnumbered heavily by the gender difference, but she very early on made a rule that all the pets had to be women.
Yeah, I
Um,
don't.
and she, I remember when I met her decades ago, and she's like, "I don't know how this happened." Like she was, like she'd gone to an all-women's college. Like it was a piece of her life, and she, now I'm just there's men everywhere, like all of it. And so, but she made a rule, which I always thought was very funny. Any pets had to be girls.
I make up for it with like vulva art everywhere and goddess imagery. So like it, I am surrounded by the images of my female sisters.
Working to. All right. So before we dig into the transformation, I want to talk a little bit more about younger you. So when you were like in middle school, say, so what were you like? What were your hobbies? Do you remember what you wanted to do and become when you grew up? Stuff like that. Tell us about like that
Absolutely.
version of you.
I love that question, and I've never been asked that. That's great. So middle school self was, I was always definitely out there, loud, playful, outgoing, and I was in all the sports. I loved doing the sports, and later on, I'm like, I don't know if I like that because I was really trying to get the attention of my father who had left, but I was very sporty. But I was also obsessed with relationships. I was obsessed with boyfriends and who's dating who, and even that carried on to high school where I was the girl at the lunch table who would like I'd pull everybody together and be like, okay, what did you experience this weekend? What happened to you? What did you feel like? I was always gathering this information about other people, what they, like what they're going through. And so I was always with that relationship lens, whether it was like, who'd you make out with? What was it like? Did you grab your boob? I gave people the assignment of like, go home and like, with your fingers, measure how big and how wide. Like I was obsessed with gathering information.
Oh my gosh. And so how old, do you mind sharing, how old were you when your parents separated?
I believe I was 4 or 5, like right on that
Really
cusp.
young. So you don't
Really
have
young.
any memory of them really being together. Very little.
Very little, like a
Very
couple
little, yeah.
little pocket memories. And they could
Yeah.
just be made up. I don't know.
Right. It's hard to tell at that point if those are real stories or stuff that people's told you. I was 5 when my parents split, and that's just, it's a very similar thing. I have no construct of my parents being together, and that definitely is a part of my story with building my family and the choices I made. So I'm sensitive. I'm sensitive or aware of that reality. All right. So that is a very good piece of this. Let's get back to the topic of the resort. So you're at the resort. You say you begin to spiral.
Oh, hard.
Was that something that you had experienced before? Like, did you pick up on it, or this was a new thing at that
This was
point?
pretty new. The early, I would say 15 years of our relationship, my husband was actually dealing with a lot of his deep trauma, and I was there with him in that process. And so this was kind of almost one of the first like scab wounds of my inner child trauma coming out in our relationship, because I kind of had felt the safety to do that. I think it was at the point where he could actually hold space for it. But it was definitely quite interesting where he just like went to, I mean, this was our, it was a 10-day vacation, just the two of us. And I think this was on like day 7, and we were making love every day. We were romantic every day. Like it was just this whole thing. And just him being gone, like going to get a drink. And I think he was gone for not even a half hour. But in that half hour, granted, alcohol was involved and now we don't drink anymore. But those things happen at perimenopause. You just start to see like this isn't serving me. So he went to go get a drink and was just gone. And in that half hour, I just started to really crumble and come up with a story of how could he just be ditching me? How could he just not come back and leave me all alone? And when he did re-enter our little hut, in like Mexico and this romantic resort, I just like it just started pouring out of me all these accusations. And actually, as it was happening, I had this moment where I sort of floated above myself and I was witnessing what was happening while I was like spewing all this out and crying. And I couldn't stop that, but I was also witnessing, like, girl, you, what is happening here? What is going on? This is outside of the normal. This is something that like is so much deeper than your husband making a friend at a bar and sitting there chatting for 20 minutes.
Yeah, so I want to click on that a little bit. I want to push on that a teeny tiny bit to get more, because it's something you experienced, but I want to sort of go through it and talk about what actually happened in that like 30 minutes, and like what was your experience, and what would other people have seen? So it's like, were you so you were in a, like a cabana, it sounds like, right? So were you crying? Were you yelling? Were you guys fighting? Would somebody outside of the hut have known that anything was going on, kind of thing? Like, what did it
No.
actually look like, and what did it feel like?
Well, when I was waiting, I could feel my heart rate elevating. I was getting hot. I was on that, like, I could see the tears, but they weren't coming out of my face yet. So I just kind of looked like a girl on vacation, I think. But then when he came back, then there was definitely crying. There was definitely I was raising my voice. And I think he was kind of like deer in headlights, a little bit shocked as to what was happening. It didn't last for more than 5 or 6 minutes, but I just, how could, just a lot of how could you do this to me? It was just, I can hear even now the victim in it. I could hear the sadness in it. I could hear the deep, deep wounds in my heart in the story. And I think that's what I was really witnessing when I kind of pulled out of it. And so we continued to sit actually in the cabana and just kind of deconstruct and talk about it, because at that point we did have the skills to hold space. We did have the skills to understand that if our partner is going through something like that, it's not a I statement. Like, so often we turn an I statement into a me statement. And so we had grown those tools together in our relationship and our partnership. And he was using those tools in a very like empathetic way. And he said he was sorry and he didn't mean for this to happen. And so he was, he didn't get into that defensive mode, which probably de-escalated it so much faster. And within an hour of us just talking and crying, at that point I was just like letting the tears come, because they had, I think I was holding on to them for s decades. And it just slowly, slowly started to unwind. And I was like, after about an hour, I'm like, I'm really sorry. I don't think that had anything to do with you, but thank you for holding space. Like, I think this is deep, deep wounds from being abandoned as a child, from waiting and having, a parent not show up for me. And, it's obviously some work I need to do. And so within an,
That's
sure.
pretty self-aware. One of the things I share the story all the time. So early on in my marriage, we were in couples counseling because of a calendar disagreements, and they were teaching us about the I statements, and I always share with people I misunderstood, and I was using I statements, but my I statements were like, I think that this is not the way this should be. I think you're doing this wrong. And we had, and so I, in my mind, I was using I statements. And then at some point, somebody's like, no, that's not actually what we mean, Amy. It's not what the I statement means. Let's go back to the drawing board. So, that's that, it's a very, very good tool, but like all tools, if you don't employ it right, it doesn't work as well. So absolutely. So, all right. So this seems like a really good time for me to take a second and speak directly to the audience and invite them into the conversation. So, for the people who are listening and watching when this is live, and you're enjoying the conversation about relationships and the impact of our younger selves and how we show up in our marriages, come over to YouTube and Instagram and Facebook, where there are discussion questions that are posted, and you can interact in the comments with me, with Melanie, with other people in the community. And that'll be super fun. If you're not already following us on social media, the links will be in the show notes. And now back to the topic. All right. So you already had a lot of skills here, and it sounds like you already were aware of the concept of abandonment. And that it would show up. So that's a pretty big deal in how this unfolds. So how did you do you have like a little bit of history of how you became aware of those things earlier in your relationship? Like did you know like from therapy with as a kid from your parents' relationship, or how did you become aware of those topics? Not to judge what you did, but for people who are listening who are like, well, how did you know?
Well, like I said, we have 20 years of experience at that point with each other, healing with each other, understanding, breaking down what our arguments were really the root of them. That was always really important to me. So if we had a big blow up or argument, which especially in our 20s and 30s we had, it was always really important to me to circle around and figure out what was really going on, what was underneath the actual disagreement, what was underneath the screaming. To fast forward to where we are now, I have a certification in love, sex, and relationship coaching that's based on somatic and somatic healing, and I'm also a somatic trauma therapist. So at that point, actually on that trip, I hadn't got my therapist certification yet, and so I was just out of the sex, love, and relationship coaching program. So I had some of those tools, and I had that added layer of consciousness that I wouldn't have had before that training. So that was on board. So when I say like I pulled back and witnessed, that's some of the things I help my clients with, and that I learned from that training in particular. So this trauma-informed approach is like, okay, there's always something bubbling underneath the surface. And one of the not so funny universal jokes out there is that only our intimate partners really trigger our inner child deepest wounds. Our friends don't, our siblings don't, our coworkers don't. It's our romantic partners, the ones that we're really wanting to be the most vulnerable with. So with all of that information in the back of my mind, that's how I was able to actually diffuse the situation within probably 30 minutes and wrap it around to like understanding what happened in an hour. These are with these tools on board in my body already. So I did want to preface that this is not like some magical.
Right. No, and so like, 'cause one of the signs that you've pushed on something that is from childhood that you're is the overreaction. But like you said, most people are not aware when it's happening, and we really need somebody to check in and be like, so this is a slightly outsized reaction, you know, could there be anything else going on? You know, it takes a lot of self-awareness to, and it's not that it doesn't happen, but it takes a lot of self-awareness to experience what you were experiencing, which is like, wow, I am slightly overreacting. And I think you mentioned there were some cocktails involved.
All
So
inclusive Mexico resort.
you know, alcohol can add lots of things, but it doesn't usually add good judgment and underreacting to a situation.
Well said.
So you shared that you realized, which I think is amazing to be able to do in the moment, that it wasn't about him. That it was about your old wounds. You described this as it was time to stop letting the wounded little girl sit in the driver's seat in your relationship. So my question is, and I think you've already answered this actually, but let's talk about like that you came to this conclusion literally sitting in the lounge chair in the cabana. And so what did in that moment in the resort in the cabana, what did that mean to you that you had come to this realization? Not about him, it's about me. Like, did it change what you did that afternoon, or what did that look like just in that day, not today, but back then?
A lot of tenderness I met myself with. So in the process of that awareness, in the process of understanding our inner child, it's actually our gift and responsibility to start reparenting and caring for the inner child. So it was a really tender afternoon as I just wrapped myself in love and compassion and understanding. So it's quick to go into judgment, like, oh, how could I do that? I'm a crazy bitch, like, you know, all these things. But instead, I chose that route of compassion where I really started to see her and listen to that little girl on a deeper level, and create that connection and start to, and I say start because it's, you know, 6 years later and I'm still sometimes wrapping her up and saying, it's okay, sweetie, I'm here with you. So I started to really understand on a deeper level how much care I needed to give her. How much support and reassurance that I wouldn't abandon her anymore, that I would be there for her. And then I went home and I scheduled some therapy.
Okay. All right. So yeah. So 'cause to get I'm going to ask a follow-up question, which is 'cause you guys were in a cabana, you had activities. What did compassion look like? Literally, and what did you do? Did you schedule a massage? Did you cancel your snorkel trip? What did that look like while you're on vacation?
Yeah, I sat on the beach actually. I left the cabana. I left the loud noise, and I just went to the beach. We had a very quiet evening that evening. We
Okay.
didn't go out to the shows. We had a nice quiet dinner and basically kind of went in to our hotel and just kind of hunkered down in a little bit slower pace. Like that was like a 6 day on a 10 day vacation, and that was the day we went to bed early. We snuggled. It wasn't rowdy. It was just very tender in that whole experience, really.
Yeah, so that it's allowing yourself to do whatever needs to be done, giving yourself permission to bed rot or to cocoon under the covers is what it sounds like. Yeah. So all right. So now the next question I'm going to ask again is not I'm going to ask you to share a little bit of your experience, but as I was writing out the question, I felt like I needed to preface it with this is not to judge what happened to you, but to give you an opportunity to describe it for other people to so that they can see themselves maybe or not see themselves in the situation. So when this was happening and when you were going through this at the resort and when you came home, why did you feel or sense that this was something that needed to be worked on and changed in the relationship? What was the drive to do the work?
The drive was that whole, what you just said, the little girl in the driver's seat, and she's driving right towards drama town. And I do not want to experience drama, especially in my sacred sanctuary of my partnership. So it's like, no, I had to take her out of the seat. I didn't want her to have the power in my partnership. So I like to connect to my queendom, my goddess, like that higher, some kind of higher version of myself. And that's who I want to be in the driver's seat. And so I wanted to carefully care for her and put her back where she belongs in the back seat with a
Okay.
seatbelt
Yeah.
on.
So you didn't want to repeat more of the drama filled environment and in your relationship. All right. So yeah. So I think that's good. And I think this is being intentional about how you show up in your relationship. I think that's beautiful. So now share with us a little bit. This is the work that you walk other people through, some of it at least today, but share with us a little bit about what the work of the transformation is. Because you've got the inner child, which some people are familiar with, and reparenting, which some people might be familiar with or maybe not. Was it instant? Okay, awareness, clarity, tools, poof, everything's great, moving on. Or what was it like to go through the work of this?
The work of it was definitely not instant.
I suspected.
And I mentioned it before in my teenage years, I'm just happy and outgoing and naturally kind of courageous. And so it takes a lot of work for me to actually tap into the sadness and the anger. So that's actually the part that took the longest was I could feel sad, but to actually embody the sadness, to allow the tears to even crumble down onto the floor, that takes a lot of work for me. It's harder than any CrossFit workout I've ever done. So it definitely took time and learning that it's okay to feel this full expression. And especially as women, we're trained to not be angry, to not be loud in our sadness. We are supposed to just be there to pick everything up with a smile on our faces. So that type of healing, which is so powerful to fully beat up a pillow and say that this isn't right and I deserve better, that definitely took some time. But once those pieces started to fall into place with my allowance, that the transformation really took this deeper route. But I have to tell you, it's still every day. Every day I still wake up and I have to say, oh, wait, my mind is racing in story of how could this happen and how did this happen to me and I deserve better and get myself out of that victim pattern, out of that little girl pattern. And that's where I have to again pick her up and ask her what she needs, what she wants to express, and then again care for her and send her to her little play area.
So, yeah, it's so all right. So, do you have siblings?
Well, I had two older step siblings, so when the divorce happened, they
Okay.
went in a different route. So I didn't really grow up with siblings in the
Oh,
house.
interesting. Okay, because you know, there's not there's no like one. This is how divorce shows up in every single person, every single child. This is how abandonment shows up in every single. But one of the things that it can show up a lot is what you're describing, which is that you become very resilient and independent, and you know, show a very strong personality, never show weakness, kind of thing. That's one of the things that can show up in adults. And then sometimes to the point where it's like actually almost a joke, that is like magnified to like an exponential level if you're the oldest kid in the house, because it's like you like become adultified earlier, you take on this responsibility, and then it's like, so that's the reason I asked if you had siblings, like, because but you were not the oldest, at least it, so it did it's this is an example of it not always being an A plus B equals C every single time, so that's great. All right, so you're doing the work, leaning into the emotions, allowing the emotions, doing those things. So now tell us about what the relationship looks like today. Let's start with like repeating hypothetically the same situation. You're away on a glorious vacation. You leave the teenagers at home. They're not throwing parties in your house while you're gone.
No, they are not.
Your partner gets up and goes to the bar, and what's different? What's different about how you handle that situation today?
Oh, I sit back and enjoy my book, enjoy my half hour.
Yeah, and no shame, no blame spiral, no fear, no sense of abandonment.
No, instead it's like this sense of gratitude, like, oh yes, I'll take this alone time. Where I think, even 6 years ago, alone time would almost freak me out. What do I do with myself
Oh.
when I'm alone? So now it's like, yeah, I want that alone time. I will take that.
That's a pretty big change in how you interact with yourself during the day, that you have been able to embrace like being your own best company and enjoy it. That's a pretty big change. All right, so in a minute we're going to do the final questions, but I want to give you a chance. You've talked a little bit about it, but I do want to give you a chance to tell people more about what you do and how you want them to connect with you after the show.
So like I mentioned before, I am a certified love, sex, and relationship coach and a somatic trauma therapist. And I use my life experience, which you've heard a little bit about today, to help busy couples reconnect on a deeper, playful level. I help couples who are experiencing similar trauma stories, similar patterns that are ready to break free. So the love is there, the connection is there, the commitment is there, but there's pieces that aren't quite in line. And so we go through a beautiful journey where we get to meet these pieces of ourselves. And I take all my couples through three different key areas. And the first one is soulful communication. So like that situation on the beach where my husband held space, he mirrored back and reflected. Learning how to communicate in a soulful, deep, sensitive way is like life-changing in partnerships. Then we go into emotional intelligence, and that's meeting the parts of ourselves that are running the subconscious mind that are showing up and dictating how we really show up in the bedroom, in our relationships, and then even into everyday life. And when those soulful communication and emotional intelligence tools are in place, then we get into sexual rediscovery, where we rediscover what sex is, what pleasure is, what you want it to look like. And it's like this empowering act of creating your own world, your own relationship, and you get to make the rules. Nobody else does. It's your space. So it's a really beautiful process. And so that's where I take my couples on. I also work with individuals, and I am. When this airs, I should be in the process of launching a date night membership. So it's a membership where couples can come together once a month, be guided through communication practices, through Eros activation, by me and sometimes my partner. So when we're demoing together, we'll both be there. And it's just going to be a beautiful way to connect. And that date night membership also includes weekly prompts that spark communication, spark invitations to go deeper in your communication, and give you some of those tools weekly to apply in your relationship. It's going to be super yummy.
That's amazing. All right, so that you, those are some really good things. So I have some follow-up questions. One is, I think that it's worth noting. I talk to people about this all the time. It's really interesting that how poorly prepared we can be as adults to have communication with our partners, and then also with our children. But it's like it's, you know, it seems like most of us go into adulthood thinking like, I know how to do this. I know how to talk to people. It's totally good. But there are specific skills for having conversations with people in your family. It's not exactly the same as how we talk to our friends, or our teachers or our own parents. So I want to give that a nod,
Yeah,
because
and
I
when
do think
we
that's important.
Yeah, and when we don't have those tools in place, the communication just lacks. You don't have the deep communication. I just did a post yesterday. The average couple spends less than 3 minutes a day communicating about deep feelings, about emotions. It's all logistics, which I understand. I have four kids. Like, we need to get shit done and take this kid to there, and the other one's going that way, and you like high five each other in the middle of the day. So it's, understanding that that communication is actually the gateway into deeper intimacy. So when we create that communication, when we even pull and say, let's just check in with each other for 5 minutes, that's actually your invitation to creating deeper, more sensual, intimate moments together.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The other thing I want to give you a chance to explain a little bit for the people who are listening who may not know is I'd love to give you a chance to talk a little bit about what the word somatic means, because it shows up in a lot of conversations in support and coaching communities. But I'm not sure that everybody listening will know what that means. So go ahead and talk about what that actually means.
Yeah, I love that. So somatic is based on the word soma, so that's our body. So a really easy way for me to describe it is to do a comparison. So cognitive therapy is talk therapy, talking about your past and things that happened to you in the past. My somatic coaching is guiding you actually into your body in the present moment to find the blocks that your body's holding that's preventing you from getting you what you want.
Okay.
So the past is involved, but it's more what is your body and your nervous system holding on to right now that's actually physically stopping you from getting what you want. So that could look like anything from tightness in my right shoulder to I have uncomfortable stomach. I feel numb and frozen. Those are all nervous system responses. And so when we begin to befriend those patterns in the nervous system, then they become your ally. Then you get to choose what you want to do with that power. So it's like this body of ours is alive. It's communicating with us all the time, but we have to pause and learn how to listen to the actual body, not just the busy brain. And the busy brain is judging and criticizing and shitting all over us. So it's a beautiful process. And so it involves a little bit of my sessions always start out with a little bit of meditation, a little bit of breath work. And then when we're in this process of listening to your body, of connecting with it, you know, eyes are shut down. You're really in the moment. You're in your body feeling. And for some of my clients, it's the first time they're safe enough to actually feel their body because you know, the trauma is so high, they don't let themselves feel from the forehead and below.
Interesting. Okay, very good. No, so you do have a special offer for the audience, which I'm going to share, which is a pop-up pod offer. And the pod in that sentence is for podcast, I think. So you sign up, there's a link in the show notes. And the easiest way to get this is always by being a subscriber to the Imperfect Adulting community, because then I just email it to you. But you get a secret, you sign up at the link below, and you get a secret link to three small bite-sized somatic practices that you can explore over 3 weeks. So that is a very generous offer, and I want to say thank you very much. Sounds like a great way to introduce people to the work that you're doing so they can try it out and see if it's a fit for what they're looking for. So thank you very much for that. All right, Melanie, are you ready for the rapid fire questions?
Okay. Let me take a sip of my coffee.
I was like, I mean, these are they're not serious, but I always get like drop that little like dramatic pause just for fun because it entertains me. It's a funny thing for me to do. All right, very good. If money and time are not obstacles, what's one dream that you still want to pursue in your future?
We have a small off-grid cabin in Costa Rica, and it's on a 50-acre or 65-acre nature preserve. But we only our little block is like 2 acres, and eventually we want to like just have all of it. We want to like create the sanctuary for the where the jungle can't be touched, and then invite people like a retreat center into that space. But it's just this
Wow.
like it's this piece of pristine Costa Rican jungle that's just it's sacred in our hearts,
That's an
and
amazing
it's good.
project. All right. That's
Yeah.
very, very cool. It's already in motion. I look forward to hearing more about that coming into existence. All right. So now this next question, I'm interested to see what you say now that I have that little bit of information. If you had to pick one single place on our beautiful planet Earth as the place that you consider to be the most beautiful to you, where is it?
It's right there. It's right in that right in that we're in the north tip of the Osa Peninsula, so it's the most biodiverse spot on the planet. And it's amazing. We have no TV, no internet. You are just like reconnecting to your primal nature with nature all around you. So it's you may sometimes the jungle gets up at 4 in the morning and you get up there and you take your coffee and you witness the jungle come to life with birds and monkeys and sloths and iguanas. And it's just like it's like primal. It's like it gets into my soul and I love it so much because it's just this is we're supposed to be in tune with nature. And when you remove the false light, when you remove all the machines and the noise, it's just like you can feel that nervous system just like set and root into the ground there. Oh, it's so good.
Fantastic. I did. So in Costa Rica, when I was in Costa Rica, there are little howler monkeys is the ones that I saw. And they're loud. They
Oh, yeah.
are loud. They let you know that you are there. I like they're vocal.
It's usually the some kind of bird wakes up the howler monkeys, and I can sleep through the bird because our whole house is screened in, so I can sleep through the birds or just be like I hear you, like open one eye and be like I hear you. But once those howler monkeys wake up, woo, okay, it's time
Oh,
to
that, 'cause I mean,
get
it's
up.
like they're yelling and it's like, oh, I feel like I should pay attention to this, you know? And, but no, they're just talking to each other. They're not talking to you. So, or at least in my experience, it wasn't, but I was fascinated by the monkeys while I was there. All right. So last one, if you are on like a long trip, like a long road trip, and you are hungry, what is a go-to favorites travel snack that you will reach for to enjoy?
I am thinking we did RV with our kids for 2 years, so what was the snack that I would go to? Dried fruit and jerky.
Okay, so that's like a truck stop. That's like it's like you stop and it's like you go and you're like, all right, jerky. That was when I used to I've asked that question before, and sometimes I'll say when you stop at the truck stop and people are like, no, I would never. And I'm like, okay, so maybe it's not a great question. But that is actually like when I was thinking about it, it's like there's that point in a long trip where you're like, all right, this is the jerky stop. Like this is where we do. All right, that's it, Melody Bonk. Thank you so much for being an amazing guest on the show today.
Yes. Thank you for creating space to be absolutely real and authentic and raw. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again. Please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.